As though he had reminded her of what had triggered her in the first place, she began unexpectedly to weep. The lemon sunlight was reflected from the bright, white, blank wall outside the window at her back, and it lingered, like St. Elmo's fire, around the ridiculously small green hat she was wearing, a suspicion of a hat that had been assembled for $70 by an aesthetic leader for whom millinery signified the foundation stone of culture. "What is the matter with you, Mother?" she sobbed. "You aren't crying about me?" she sobbed and nodded. "But I'm all right. I don't have a pain or an ache. I am absolutely fine."
"Oh, Raymond, what can I say to you? There has been so much to get done. We have so far to go. Johnny is going to lead the people of our country to the heights of their history, but I have to lead Johnny, Raymond. You know that. I know you know that. I have given my life and many, many significant things for all of this. My life. Simply that, and I can see that if I were to ransack my strength, remembered strength or future strength, I could not give more to this holy crusade than I have given. Now I have come face to face with my life, where it has failed to cross your own. I can't tell you how a mother feels about that, because you wouldn't understand. It made me weep for a little bit, that's all. What's that? Anybody and everybody recovers from tears. But I'm not sad. And I don't have regrets, because I know that what I did and what I do is for the greatest possible good for all of us."
Raymond watched her, then made the small despising gesture with his right hand, brushing her world out of his way as it came too close to him. "I don't understand one word of what you are saying," he told her.
"I'm saying this. Some terrible, terrible changes are going to come to this country."
He flicked at the air with his hand violently, unaware of the movement, and he closed his eyes.
"This country is going to go through a fire like it has never seen," she said in a low and earnest voice. "And I know what I'm saying, because the signs are there to read, and I understand politics, which is the art of reading them. Time is going to roar and flash lightning in the streets, Raymond. Blood will gush behind the noise, and stones will fall, and fools and mockers will be brought down. The smugness and complacency of this country will be dragged through the blood and the noise in the streets until it becomes a country purged and purified back to original purity, which it once possessed so long ago when the founding fathers of this republic, the blessed, blessed fathers, brought it into life. And when that day comes, and we have been cleansed of the slime of oblivion and saved from the wasteful, wrong, sinful, criminal, selfish rottenness, which Johnny, and only Johnny, is going to save us from, you will kneel beside me and thank me and kiss my hands and my skirt and give only me your love, as will the rest of the great people of this confused and blinded land."
He put his hand over hers on the bed, then lifted it to his lips. Suddenly he felt himself being made soft with pity for both of them. He could not comprehend that his mother had any feelings, and it shocked him deeply. 2 days later, immediately after Raymond ate dinner in the room at Swarden, with his legs still in a cast, Zilkov and the American operator came to the room with a package of playing cards, and subsequently gave him detailed instructions as to how he was to kill Holborn Gaines. The time, they said, was 3:45 the following morning. Gaines lived in an apartment house alone. The house maintained a self-service elevator after 1 a.m. when the night man went off duty. There was no doorman. Zilkov had had a key made to fit the front door of the building and to Mr. Gaines' apartment, which was one of four on the ninth floor. The security man went over the pencil-sketched, then photostated floor plan of Gaines' small unit of three rooms and a bath, indicating where the bedroom was, and suggesting that Raymond strangle him, as it was the quietest and least complicated method, and considering the close quarters in which he would have to work, the neatest. He added that Raymond must accept it as a rule, then and forever, that in the event that anyone, repeat, anyone, ever discovered him on the scene of the assignment, this other person or persons must be killed. Was that clear? Zilkov may have reconsidered the risk he had decided to have Raymond run, for, to make sure this condition was understood, he asked the American operator to repeat the admonition. As it worked out, Mr. Gaines was alone, but he was not asleep, as he should have been, to save Raymond considerable embarrassment. He was reading in bed, a four-poster feather bed with 9 soft pillows all around him and a shocking pink marabou bed jacket around his shoulders, chuckling over a few pounds of confidential reports from bureau chiefs in Washington, Rome, London, Madrid, and Moscow. The windows were closed tight, and, as in the office at all times, an electric heater was beaming up at him from the floor nearby. In July. As Raymond opened the door to the apartment, he knocked over the tall paper screen that Mr. Gaines kept in front of the open door in the summertime. As it fell, it dislodged a picture hanging on the wall. It hit the floor with a crash. There could be no doubt that someone had come to call, and Raymond cursed himself as a blunderer, because he knew well that Mr. Gaines would be tart about the visit in any event.
"What the hell is that?" Mr. Gaines yelled shrilly.
Raymond flushed with embarrassment. It was an entirely new feeling for him, and Mr. Gaines was the only living person who could have made him feel that way, because Mr. Gaines made him feel helpless, gawky, and grateful all at the same time.
"It's me, Mr. Gaines," he said. "Raymond."
"Raymond? Raymond?"
Mr. Gaines was bewildered.
"My assistant? Raymond Shaw?"
Raymond appeared in the bedroom doorway at that moment. He was wearing a neat black suit, a dark gray shirt, a black tie, and black gloves.
"Yes, sir," he said. I'm sorry to disturb you, Mr. Gaines."
Mr. Gaines fingered the marabou bed jacket.
"Don't get any ideas about this silly-looking bed jacket," he said irritably. "It was my wife's. It's the warmest thing I have. Perfect for reading in bed at night."
"I didn't know you were married, Mr. Gaines."
"She died nearly 6 years ago,"
Mr. Gaines said gruffly. Then he remembered.
But what the hell are you doing here?"
Mr. Gaines looked over at the alarm clock on the night table.
"At 4:10 in the morning."
"Well,
my God, Raymond, don't tell me you've come here to talk something over. I mean, surely you aren't going to pour out your heart with the details of some sordid love affair or anything like that."
"No, sir. You see..."
"Raymond, if you feel you must resign for any reason, a circumstance which I would regret, of course, surely you could leave a little note on my desk in the morning." "I hate chattering like this. I thought I had explained to you that I loathe having to talk to people, Raymond."
"Yes, sir. I'm sorry, Mr. Gaines."
Mr. Gaines suddenly seemed to remember something significant. He lifted his left hand and pointed vaguely toward the door, looking, because of the fluffy feathers all around his white hair, something like the ancient Mrs. Santa R. Claus.
"How did you get in here? When I close that door, it locks."
"They gave me a key."
"Who did?"
"The people at the hospital."
"What hospital? But why? Why did they give you a key?"
Raymond had been moving slowly around the bed. At last he stood at Mr. Gaines' side, looking down at him, sunk into the feather bed. He felt sheepish.
"Raymond, answer me, my boy. Why are you here?"
It was a relatively effortless job, because Mr. Gaines, being such an old man, did not have much strength. And Raymond, because of feelings of affection and gratitude for Mr. Gaines, did everything he could with his great strength to terminate his friend's life as quickly as possible. He thought of extinguishing the bed light as he left, but turned it on again, remembering that he wouldn't be able to find his way out to the front door if he left the room in darkness.